Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Dr. Hugh Ross's Paradox class. Boy, sounds like the volume is hot here. Well, that's because the subjects are going to be hot. We've got Dr. Mark Clark with us again today, 2 weeks in a row. Hooray. Today, he's going to be talking about recent government-released UAP data files and how all of this, of course, relates to our Christian faith. And he's going to be co-authoring a new book on UAP and UFOs with Hugh Ross and Ken Samples, and we can expect to see that in April 27. Do you have a title for it yet?
No.
No title yet, but I'm sure you'll be back, hopefully before then, and when you know, you can tell us. So he has two books, though, that we can talk about. The first one, what he has a section in, Lights in the Sky and Little Green Men, which is himself and Hugh Ross. And then his book, with a foreword by Hugh Ross, is Daniel in Babylon, which I am reading now. So, and this is what he spoke on when he was here a few months ago. I don't have any place to put anything here. All right, what's coming up next week? Skeptics Forum, finally, the first one we're going to be doing since COVID. So, same time, 12:15, we're going to go till 2 o'clock. It's mostly going to be question and answer. Hugh will come up here and say some provocative things that'll get everybody going. And hopefully you can bring your skeptical friends. That's really what this is about. So please invite people. Please pray ahead of time. And there's a terrific poster that I saw that's back there on the table. What is truth? Your truth? My truth? Objective truth? Can they all be true? This is the kind of thing we want to talk about. Please invite your friends to this. Invite people that can bring some really good questions. Thank you for everybody who brings treats. There's a sign-up sheet. We don't usually do that, but for the Skeptics Forum, we want to make sure that we have enough people bringing treats. So if you're coming next week and you can, please bring something and put your name on that sheet back there. November 2nd, 2 weeks from now, Hugh will be with us. And then November 9th, Joey Versace from Reasons to Believe is going to be with us. And he was here a few months ago, and he was pretty fantastic. He's going to be talking about opening hearts, discovering your unique evangelism style. You know, we're all called to evangelize, all of us, but we're not called to evangelize in the same way. God has given each one of us gifts, and one of our prayers should be, Lord, show me how to do this in a way that honors you and is true to myself. So with all of that, I think that's everything I got to say. The less of me, the more we get to hear from Mark Clark. So let's say a prayer. Gracious Heavenly Father, thank you. Thank you so much for this class, for what it's meant to us all. Every Sunday we get to come and think with our brain about what it means to worship you and honor you and bless you and how to spread the word of who you are and your fantastic sacrifice for us, Lord. We ask your blessing on Dr. Clark as he speaks with us today and on each one of us as we go our way this afternoon. Thank you, Lord. In Jesus' name, amen. Please welcome Dr. Mark Clark.
Thank you, Ross. Just make sure this works fine. Thank you. Here's your notes, too, by the way, Ross. I'll get it to you later. That's okay. Anyway, last week we discussed the kind of recent disclosures, government disclosures of UAP files. Okay, so, and we talked about couple of international incidents that were pretty provocative. One was in Tehran in 1976, and this is the place where a major at the time, Jafari, had tried to engage his weapon systems against a UFO hovering over northern Tehran, a suburb of northern Tehran. And the problem was his targeting pod and communications went out. He was electronically jammed by this UFO. And then 4 years later in Peru, there was a fellow by the name of Lieutenant Huertas who was challenged to go up and take out this particular light bulb-shaped UFO in La Jolla Air Force Base in Peru. And the reason for that was because they were the primary Latin American country that had Soviet weapons. And he flew a Sukhoi 22. He went up and actually shot at this thing, firing 30 millimeter rounds that did nothing to this object. And when it realized it was being attacked, physically attacked, instead of jamming him, it took off. And the two got together a few years later, about 15 years later, and they discussed it. And Huerta's theory was because his systems were analog, not digital, he couldn't be electronically jammed in the same way that Jafari's aircraft could be. And then we rolled into the two new big events that occurred in the U.S. 2004, off the San Clemente here in the West Coast, the Nimitz carrier group was training for a deployment to the Middle East when they spotted this UAP somewhere out in the distance, between 20 and 80,000 feet in the air, moving back and forth. And so one fellow by the name of Commander David Fravor was sent out to investigate it, along with the second pilot and another F-18, Alex Dietrich. And she stood high to cover in the event of anything happening, and he went after it. And then the thing moved in uncanny ways and split. And it moved so fast, it was found 60 miles away on radar within a minute's time. And Fravor said, "I've never seen anything like it. There's no thing that we are aware of that can do this." It was shaped, they called it the Tic Tac, because it was shaped like a giant propane tank. But from a distance, it looked like a small Tic Tac mint of some kind. And then in 2014 to 2015, Ryan Graves reports, he was a lieutenant in the Navy, he was on the sensors by Virginia Beach, and they were doing training operations, warning Area 72, off of the Virginia coast. And it was at this place where pilots started reporting UAPs interfering with flight paths of these jets. And these are more modern FA-18s. And two pilots going into the warning area where they do begin their training, there appeared to be a transparent spherical object with a gray cube in it that was located right at where they were supposed to get into it. And they had to avoid collision, so they split, and they eventually called it off. There was a rear admiral at the time who received an email about flight safety issues that were going on, and if they couldn't figure out what was happening, they would have to shut down exercises, which they eventually did. Well, all this led to a lot of revelation, a lot of pressure by members of Congress, both the Senate and House, by the public, of course, for what are these things. And so we talked about that last week. The reason why I re-mention them today is because a couple of the characters in this one will kind of play out today in our talk about government conspiracies and cover-ups. And the reason for that is that's a big challenge. It's always been the case that you have people claiming that the U.S. government hides more than it knows or more than it's willing to share about unidentified anomalous phenomena or UFOs, the modern term. So we're going to do that today. And there's a really good journalist reporter who is favorably disposed to the extraterrestrial hypothesis. Her name is Leslie Keene. She's made done quite a bit of research into this UFO, both worldwide and domestic. But she said in this, it's very journalistically tough to really investigate the UFO or UAP problem. And the reason is because the subject is contaminated by conspiracy theories, disinformation, and just plain sloppiness by all parties. And she argued that you need to separate things out. You have to carefully separate out what are the facts versus what are the myths and disinformation. And then finally, she says, and she points out, look, at the most credible witnesses she's ever interviewed over years of research are mostly pilots, but not exclusively. And almost all disagree or have no concept of what the UAP really are. They don't have a certainty of what UAP is. And despite the uncertainties of this, there are some that claim the government still hides retrieval, crashed UAP saucer retrieval program, and in some cases aliens that have landed and crashed in this. So that these folks then make this claim that there's a conspiracy by the U.S. government to hide it. And what's interesting, and this is something that I just found out about this Thursday, and I'll play you a clip from at the end of this, there's a new documentary coming out in November, November 21st. It's called The Age of Disclosure, and it's a testimony of 34 former government officials who claim that we do have a crash retrieval program and alien biologics. Now, that's the way the trailer purports or shows it. We'll give you some basis for analyzing whether that may or may not be true. And we'll do that today. And I'm going to do it through a prism of something that happened in summer of 23. There was two in particularly strong congressional testimonies, and a lot of congressional pressure, but strong congressional testimonies by people about this UAP phenomena. And we'll use that as a portal to examine this idea. Is the U.S. government covering up? Well, look at what was testified, the claims that they made, the evidence they presented, and ask this reasonable question. Is there a government conspiracy? But before we do that, though, I want to make this key point here that needs to be done. When we talk about either a cover-up or a conspiracy, we have to keep in mind the legal definition of both of them. A conspiracy, and you can look on almost any law dictionary online, and you'll see this. A conspiracy is an agreement between two or more parties to commit an illegal act, along with the intent to achieve it, the agreement's goal, the goals of that agreement. And most U.S. jurisdictions also require that there be an overt act, a step in the direction of effectuating that conspiracy. So conspiracy is two people or more agreeing to and have the intent to commit an illegal act. Cover-up is slightly different. And I'm bringing this up because of some of the testimony and what they were driving at. Cover-up, the act of concealing wrongdoing, often through deceptive means to evade or obstruct justice or investigations. This can involve hiding evidence, spreading misinformation, or intimidating those who might reveal the truth. Now, what I want you to be aware of is these two legal definitions require an illegal act happening, meaning there's something illegal going on. And that begs the question, is covering up a UAP program illegal? Congress has made no law that makes it illegal to cover up a UAP if we had them. So that's an interesting component right here. The claim that we'll get into is that they're doing something illegal, and yet Congress has made no law that says covering up a UAP program is illegal. Congress has never, so that's really key. The key thing is the testimony of these people that make these claims don't come out and say it's a cover-up or conspiracy, but they push what they say in their testimony to make it fall into the category of either a cover-up, a legal cover-up, or illegal cover-up or conspiracy. So it's kind of hard for you to see, but I'm going to talk about it. There's two testimonies that occurred in 2023 that really brought this to public's attention. The one in July of 23 was probably the bombshell testimony, and I'll talk about why. At that, there was at least three people. There was more, but the three key ones. Ryan Graves, the lieutenant we talked about, who was off of Virginia Beach in 2014, 2015. He has since retired from the Navy and has got a group together advocating for safety of flight concerns, meaning for pilots, both military and commercial pilots. His concern is these things are real, whatever they are, and they are interfering with flight safety. The second fellow is David Fravor that we mentioned earlier. He was a commander in the U.S. Navy in the first incident off the coast of California. He was also a Navy pilot who experienced it, but he never came forward until reluctantly his friend said, you might want to do it for flight safety reasons. So he did. Now, the key thing is, when pressed, neither David Fravor nor Ryan Graves could say what UAP was. They were sort of unsure. But the third person that exposed or it brought about the greatest bombshell testimony is this former DOD, Department of Defense, administrator, David Grush. And David Grush got up there and said, no, the U.S. has a reverse engineering UAP retrieval program. And what does it mean to reverse or back engineer? It means to capture something that's already more sophisticated than we have and then try to figure out how it was built so we can replicate that. So he claims we have this program. And he also claims that we have the remains of what he called non-human biologics. Apparently that means dead ET, but I'm not sure because he doesn't go further than that. And his most outstanding claim is that there's alien life out there. This is evidence of alien life. Now, what's fascinating is Graves and Fravor brought a great number of eyewitnesses testimony to their eyewitness testimony to their congressional testimony, but they also had sensor data. They had radars, infrared, videotapes, so they had a lot of evidence to support their claim, and yet they were unsure of what UAP was. David Grusch, when pressed, offered no evidence, zero evidence. When pressed, he said, well, I can't reveal it because it's classified. And pressed, he was pressed once, four or five times maybe. He even claimed that, for example, when he went public with this in a News Nation article in June of 23, he was retaliated against, though he didn't specify what that retaliation looked like or who did it. He also claims he knows people were harmed by UAP phenomena, but when pressed, he would not say what that harm was. Now, I want you to pay attention to this because it sounds bizarre, and you're going to hear that in this video clip, all these people making these claims. What's interesting is if it's true that they want to protect national security, typically when you get a high level security clearance of whatever kind, any kind, but particularly the highest level security clearances, you are required to sign an NDA, a non-disclosure agreement, including the consequences, the legal consequences for violating that secret. Stating there is a crash retrieval program and we have the remains of non-human biologics, if true, would be betraying that NDA. And yet they said in testimony, and then the second congressional testimony, we'll see the same thing happen, they claim they couldn't share the evidence because of secrets. So already there's something going on here. There's a very big concern. At the subsequent November hearing, Luis Elizondo, he's called, he was also part of the ATIP program we talked about last week. He does the same thing, although it's not the bombshell now because David Grusch, you know, let the cat out of the bag in July. But he supports David Grusch's statements that there is a reverse engineering program, that we've probably been doing it for 8-9 decades, and that we have non-human biological remains. And again, it's evidence of alien life. So again, no evidence he provides except a claim, and yet they have high confidence in what this is, that it's alien life. Tim Gallaudet was there also, and I mentioned him. He was the one who, he was a rear admiral at the time. He was in on the second operation in 2014. He wasn't there, but he received, because he was the Navy's oceanographer, he received an email alert on the very highly classified systems that there was flight safety issues going on in this area, multiple near mid-air collisions, and if something doesn't happen, we have to shut the operation down. His big claim, and this is interesting, is that the next day his email was wiped clean. He couldn't find any evidence of it. And then there was a journalist by the name of Michael Schellenberger. And Michael Schellenberger, you may know, you may not. I didn't know that I had read some of his stuff. I usually don't, but every once in a while he has something interesting. He runs a site called Public. And he has a blog piece through Substack. He makes this claim, and he only has corroboration by a witness he couldn't bring to the testify, that the U.S. has this huge, very deep level, comprehensive, secure, highly classified program to detect and reverse engineer alien life. And it's been going on for lots of years. And his only testimony is a whistleblower that he doesn't reveal the name of, and corroborated by one other person. He is unsure of what this alien life is. And then there's finally Michael Gold. Michael Gold was a NASA member. He was a member of the and I remember we talked about it last week a little bit, the independent study team NASA was asked to assemble to recommend how we could discover and deal with UAP phenomena. All he looked at was Navy data, the sensors, the technology, and all that. He was sort of unsure. He was very unsure what this stuff was. He had no idea. So there's the big ones. Now, let's just keep this in mind. We have people that are unwilling to share, based on secrecy, what they claim is these deep programs that we have that are highly classified, and they try to intimidate. In fact, they go on to say, not only did Gruce say he was intimidated and threatened with retaliation, but Lou Elizondo does the same thing. And he says there's actually a cabal of people, a secret group, who purposely go out to intimidate. Now, what's interesting about both these fellows, is that they also say Congress has no effective oversight of these things. Schellenberger does too. He says, look, Immaculate Constellation is this unacknowledged special access program. Special access programs are how we develop the B-2 bomber in secret. Special access programs are how we develop the F-117 stealth fighter bomber. How we develop any highly classified weapons program is usually done through what's called a special access program. But he comes up with a term that people don't use, and an unacknowledged one, is a way of saying the U.S. is conspiring to hide it from congressional oversight. All these claims push it to the level of either cover-up, the intimidation, the retaliation, or conspiracy. And that's why their testimony became important. Again, the biggest one was David Grush's testimony, the bombshell testimony in July 23, that we have captured UAP, that we have the remains of non-human biologics, or dead ET, that he experienced personal retaliation by people who wouldn't name, and that he wouldn't name these people, but he has colleagues who had suffered injury by exposure to UAP phenomena. And again, since that time, he has brought zero evidence to either a classified hearing or a public hearing. So it's not verified at all. And Elizondo takes it further. He says, he claims that the U.S. possesses UAP. He also argued that a small group, remember this is the key thing, small group in the government is involved with intimidating the program and threatens anyone that will reveal it. And that Congress lacked congressional oversight. And that people are suffering any kind of harassment should they go public. So these are all pretty interesting claims. The key thing is, and I wanted to focus on this, is if you look on the left side of this, those who had the most close-level experience with UAP, and I mean the pilots, Fravor and Graves, in their testimony, they bring in multiple lines of evidence, and they have very low confidence what UAP is. And most importantly, there's two things they say. They were concerned about flight safety issues because of the near mid-air collisions, and none of the military people were threatened or harassed by coming forward and speaking out. Then you have these administrators, Grush and Elizondo in particular, offer zero evidence, but they have very high levels of confidence in what this is alien life. And that it really is beyond or out from under the control or oversight by Congress. And both of these testimonies push it to the level of conspiracy, legal terms, conspiracy and cover-up. Another way of looking at this is think of it this way. If you think of on the left side of this is the confidence level these folks have and the evidence level, it's very interesting. By Grush and Elizondo, they have the highest level of confidence and zero evidence. The pilots who have the most evidence, high level, have zero concern or claim or certainty as to what UAP is. And that's a very interesting thing. You see this separation. For me, the most credible witnesses are those that offer evidence. Especially for Grush. Grush said he was not read in congressional testimony. He made this case. Even though he was part of the UAP task force before it became AARO, or All Domain Anomaly Resolution Office, we talked about last week, he was never read into those programs. He only heard of it from other people. All four of his claims were only heard. It's basically hearsay testimony. And Elizondo just says, can't talk about it secret, can't talk about it secret. So there's a lack of, here's some of the biggest concerns, why their testimony is hard. Now, it's going to be hard for you to see this, I apologize. A lot of this data will come out in the book. But really the biggest challenge is, you know, that if we really had a captured UEP, reverse engineering UEP program, and we've had it for as long as since 1947 or earlier, we've seen no technological improvements, because UEP is very good at stealth technology. It's great at propulsion systems. And we'll talk a little bit later. There's a group that goes to investigate this, and all, including members of Lockheed Martin Skunk Works, other aerospace folks, Department of Energy, National Labs, they're all very interested. If we had that program, where is the technology that should flow from that? In fact, UAP propulsion, if it's real, it's not something else, if it's real, interplanetary, it would revolutionize our propulsion systems. It would revolutionize how we fly aircraft. Now, the AARO, since its founding or its setting up in 2022, looked through and said, look, everything that they have found points to no indication of alien life and zero indication of foreign threats. We talked about that last week. But then they did a separate study, and they went back over 50-plus years to the end of World War II. Do we have anything like an internal crash retrieval program? And they found zero evidence of that. Nor did they find any evidence of anything reverse engineered. In the first book that we did almost 25 years ago, one of the big claims back in the day was that, well, you know, clearly the B-2 bomber and the stealth fighters were reverse engineered from alien craft. I mean, that was the claim back then. The problem with that is, and you talk to people in aerospace, and all will tell you those are evolutionary, not revolutionary developments. What do I mean by that? Well, in World War II, we already knew the problem of radar detection. In fact, we considered building wood aircraft so as to avoid radar. The problem was, structurally, wood is not capable of carrying heavy payloads. So it has to be metal. So ablative coating, and if you look at the F-117, the stealth fighter, if you remember that, and the B-2 bomber, how they're designed to deal with radar is very different. The B-2 bomber has very smooth surfaces, and all of its carriage is underneath, within, and so it's meant to hide a very low profile. Do you have a question?
We have an announcement. Somebody's car is blocking the driveway.
Okay, so someone's car is blocking. You want to?
Sorry, somebody's car is blocking the driveway. It's a Toyota. 5TOZ305.
Someone's leaving. No?
Does so it's parked right in here. It's blocking the whole road. So. Is that yours, Nancy? You want me to move it for you?
What's that?
Okay. No. No, it's important. No place to park. So let's go back to the AARO that stood up. Sean Kirkpatrick was a very reputable scientist who was the first director. The subsequent director is also a very reputable scientist. And he got tired of handling these claims that they're covering things up and all that. And so they looked into it. They brought in teams. They have intel analysts and they have technology specialists. And they looked everywhere and could not find any evidence of any of the things the claims were made. The expert analysts, if you talk to other expert analysts, not these people who are making the claims, but others, what they, it's interesting, and we'll see it, experts suggest that government conspiracy theories presuppose a level of competence and planning not usually found in the U.S. government's work. And this is no offense against government. There's a lot of very good folks that work in it, and a lot of my former students do. But even they will tell you, it's, you know, left hand, right hand, do we know what we're talking about? I remember after... I don't know if I want to get into this, but there's one of my former students who works at CIA, called and talked to me one time, and he, you know, it was during one of the first shutdowns, not this one. And you remember the claims, it's deep state, it's all against the president at the time. He talked to a friend of his in the State Department, he goes, you know, Dr. Clark, he still calls me that, he goes, there is a deep state, but it's not cohesive. It's not coherent. There are people who think very differently than in different administrations that come and go, but they don't act in concert in any way. So multiple and most reputable, I should say, researchers are very skeptical of broad conspiracy theories and cover-ups. Now, think about it. Yeah. Think about it. What Grush and Elizondo and a couple of others, especially that we're going to see on this trailer, later claim is if it's been going on for 50 to 80 to 90 years, think about how many tens, if not hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people would have been exposed to the program at one point or another. I will tell you, there's in the field of all intelligence agencies, secret work programs, everything else, one of the biggest challenges they have is keeping secrets for very long. It's the hardest thing to do in Washington, D.C. We used to, you know, there's still, it's a great journal. It's called Aviation Week in Space Technology. We used to call it Aviation Leak in Space Phenomenology because it would report everything within weeks. I remember going to the Pentagon and sitting down with a former student of mine who worked at the time for the National Mapping Agency, and right next to me was this image of a satellite image of something, and I won't say what it was, and I had seen that same image, and it was an artist's rendition of the image in Aviation Week in Space Technology, just the week before, and I actually got to see the real image, highly classified. So it's pretty interesting that they could keep a secret like that for 50, 60, 70, 80 years without one person, without a memoir, without a book, without some kind of contract to write something and make millions. And yet, we haven't seen any of it. We've seen neither the technology nor any of the kind of really, exposés that you would expect. Understanding government. Retired Colonel John Alexander, who we're going to talk about in a moment, argues that independent UAP researchers awfully simply do not understand how the government works. This is a man who had his career in the Army, worked for 10 years in the Pentagon, and we'll talk about him a little bit because he put together a special project to figure out who was doing the UAP research. Political scientists actually evaluate it and think it's more of a cultural taboo. Some political scientists suggest that the government reluctance to acknowledge the phenomenon is due to a political and cultural taboo. And I think they're onto something there, but not a conspiracy. And what do I mean by that? When I first started doing research into this for this new book, I went back to the 1950s, and anything to do with UFOs was much more closely associated with the paranormal than it is today. And as the nation has moved away from its Christian origins, it's less and less afraid of breaking taboos like that. And it was a taboo to have any affiliation with something that is related to paranormal activity. J. Allen Hynek, who was instrumental in a lot of things early on, has written books on it, he thinks his proposal is that the U.S. government has been covering up its ignorance. After years of research, Allen Hynek says he concluded that the U.S. government was covering up its ignorance of what the phenomenon was, not its knowledge. And Leslie Keene thinks it's helplessness by the U.S. government. She concluded there was a more reasonable alternative, that the U.S. was helpless in confronting the mystery of the UFO phenomena, that it remained a mystery even to the government. Now, I wanted to talk about John Alexander. I mentioned him briefly. John Alexander wrote a really good book, if you're interested in reading it, UFOs, Myths, Conspiracies, and Realities. And one of the things he points out, he does some really good work. He does some fantastic stuff. During the 80s, he was convinced on a personal level that we had a crash retrieval program, that something happened at Roswell, that we had a body. He absolutely believed it, and he had very high levels of clearance. So he decided to create, it was sort of a hobby for him, what he called the Advanced Theoretical Project, the ATP. And what he meant by that was a way to avoid the stigma of UFO and talk to friends and try to get them involved in research. But they had to have super high clearances. There was a number of assumptions they had, which is really interesting. One, they all had to be invited by John Alexander into the group. He had to know him in some fashion, some professional way. They all shared the expectation that, yes, someone in the U.S. government really did hide a UAP program. They also expected, and this is really interesting, the assumption, they expected that they would find it in one of these groups of people that he recruits into ATP. And they got together and they all believed that one of the others must have had this retrieval program. And this is interesting. They all had to have high clearances. And what I mean is they had to have TSSCI clearance. What is that? Top Secret Special Compartment Intelligence. That is a very, TSSCI is high level, and then you get read into the various departments. This is where Grush claims he wasn't read in. He had TSSCI, but he wasn't read into some programs. And then SITK, this is another very interesting clearance. It stands for sensitive information, I'm sorry, secure information. And it's TK stands for talent keyhole, the keyhole satellites we have in space. So the SCTK is our intercept of communications and our ability to observe everything on the ground from space. So they all had to have clearances. They all had to have interest in this thing. They all expected that someone else had the UAP research program in the U.S. government, and they were all willing to go find it. They figured, their assumption was that at best, they would find whoever was running the UAP program, they'd get read into it, and then they could understand what was going on. At worst, they would be told, okay, there is a real program, now you have to sign the NDA and you're not allowed to talk about it, and then forever go your way. Because neither of those things happened, he wrote this book. And he spent 8 years looking, 8 or 9 years then in the 80s. Their ultimate conclusion, they went to members of NORAD, Northern American Air Defense, Defense Intelligence Agency, CIA, the National Security Agency, aerospace leaders like Ben Rich, who was at Skunk Works, Lockheed Martin, Edward Teller, the father of the hydrogen bomb, a number of others. These are just some, a sampling. Their scope was to go figure out where it was. They figured it'd be in the Air Force or CIA or NSA. The cool thing about NSA was, you know, NSA used to be called No Such Agency or Never Say Anything because they're very, very secure and secret, right? They gave them access to intercepts of Soviet scientists interested in the UAP phenomena as well, and they got to read it. Now, what's fascinating is they read everything they could find in the classified and the unclassified domains about UFOs and UAP, and they made this statement, and I thought it was a very bold one. Only about 1% of the actual information that's in the world about UAP is classified. 99% is available publicly. And he gave an example, and which is interesting, because we talked about, remember, Tehran, Jafari. Why did the U.S. Not talk about the DIA, had a debrief of Jafari after his exposure to the UAP? Because, again, we did not want the Shah of Iran knowing we had our spies interrogating people in his government. And so once the fall of Iran occurs, it can be declassified. And he argues that's helpful. We do not want to compromise highly placed people who we have access to or means by which we have access to. But their ultimate conclusion, after they looked around the table and then investigated every other agency they went through, the ultimate conclusion, no one has that responsibility. Not a single group in the U.S. government. And again, this is going to lead to our conclusion. The feasibility concealment. Again, while conspiracies and cover-ups do happen, that's why there's laws against them in the U.S., and that's why we have spies to ferret out when other countries are conspiring against us internationally. Concealing a UAP program for nearly 90 years across multiple generations of people would be almost virtually impossible to not be exposed. Keane points out we have no testimony of the wife or retired person talking about a secret program. Burden of proof. Carl Sagan once said, and it's a good point, extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. And the problem with UAP phenomena is that there's not even normal evidence being offered, meaning any evidence whatsoever by Elizondo, Schellenberger, or David Grusch. Now, having done this, submitted the book chapter, this is the basic stuff of that chapter, I found, and then preparing this talk for this week, I found this Thursday there's actually a new movie coming out that's going to contradict everything I just told you. Or will it? Again, the scope of what I did is I took the congressional testimony of 2023 and evaluated the claims that were made there to evaluate whether we have a government conceal-up program. When you see this thing, you're going to question what I just told you. But I think it's worthwhile looking at it because you need to be aware of it. Will this come up if I put the YouTube on, Jamie? Okay. It should be on. The presentation? Okay. Okay, here we go.
The American people are ready receive the truth.
Can you hear it now?
Humanity is not the only intelligence in the universe.
Humanity is not the only intelligent species.
We are absolutely not alone.
Non-human intelligence exists.
UAPs are real. They're here, and they're not human. I spent 20...
Wait, Jamie, wait. I was going to play it through this. Sorry about that, folks. I think we're back in sync. I think it's, I can put this. Sorry, my old technology will work. Let's try it.
The American people are ready to receive the truth.
Humanity is not the only intelligence in the universe.
Humanity is not the only intelligent species.
We are absolutely not alone.
Non-human intelligence exists.
UAPs are real. They're here, and they're not human.
I spent 25 years as a senior official with the CIA.
I worked on highly classified UAP programs.
28 years as an astrophysicist.
I served as the fourth director of national intelligence.
Director of aviation security in the National Security Council.
The one-star admiral after 32 years of service.
People that come forward with this, I feel like they've taken their life in their own hands.
I was recruited to a highly sensitive government program that investigated unidentified aerial phenomenon.
For over 16 years, on behalf of the U.S. government, I worked as a senior intelligence official on the unidentified aerial phenomenon topic.
We learned that the U.S. government was involved in a long-running secret war with other nations to collect and reverse engineer vehicles not made by humans.
I have seen with my own eyes non-human craft and non-human beings. The first country that cracks the code on this technology will be the leader for years to come.
China has established its own version of a UAP task force.
You think for a second that they wouldn't consider using it to achieve their ends of domination?
This is similar to the Manhattan Project. This is the atomic weapon on steroids.
This is so secret, very, very few people in our entire government have been allowed access to it.
Even presidents have been operating on a need-to-know basis. But that begins to ramp out of control.
It's not acceptable to have secret parts of government that no one ever sees.
You better be careful about a government that doesn't trust its people, because there's no telling what they'll pull on you.
This is the biggest discovery in human history.
You had information being locked away that could change the trajectory for species.
It has so many beneficial impacts, including clean energy.
We should have disclosure today. We should have disclosure tomorrow. The time has come.
Okay. So what'd you think about their talk, their presentation? Any thoughts? Anyone want to take a stab at that? I'm sorry? It sounded like an action movie trailer, yeah. No evidence was given, except one. There's a guy named Jay Stratton, who I just found out about, worked on the program at the DIA, Defense Intelligence Agency. He's the one that said, I have seen him. But he didn't tell us where he saw him, which is, I think, is quite interesting. I've seen a craft and I've seen aliens. There are a lot of people who report or as witnesses have seen aliens. Did he see it in the government vaults or outside of it? We'll see what the whole video will come up with. So there's a lot of, you know, this is going to revolutionize. If you go back in the history of UFO phenomena, this has been the claim forever and a day, that it will radically change who we are as human beings. It'll radically change our perspective. It'll radically benefit us. Or, in some cases, they're going to here to destroy us. They're doing reconnaissance to come as a forerunner and then kill us all down the road. Or they want our resources. Any number of these, but it'll be interesting to see. But what I have given you is the evidence that I discovered through just normal research. And the reason why I think it's fairly reliable, what I gave you, I couldn't cover everything. There's probably 3,000 or 4,000 different conspiracies in the realm of UFO and UAP, more than that and everything else. It's this age of distrust that we're in, right? We know people, political leaders, governing institutions, education, has all come under more and more scrutiny, and the COVID only accelerated that decline in the wrong way. So I think you're going to see this. My research and our research is reliable. And again, if you don't know, our thesis has been from the first book to this one that what we see, the residual phenomena that we are seeing, is angelic but fallen angelic beings. That is to say, UAP phenomena is real, it's non-physical, and it can have physical impacts. And this is where Hugh's sections will be really important on the science. So I will leave it open for questions. I think Ross has already lined up with some questions and leave it open for you to ask.
Wow, thanks, Mark. That's pretty cool information. It's really fun to think about this stuff. We've got a good question from Joe Gadzia online. He says, what are your thoughts on the mass sightings of aliens by young school children in Zimbabwe at the aerial school, which was somewhat similar to the sighting by school children in Australia in Westhall? Are you familiar with those?
I've heard of them. I don't know. Hugh deals with them in his section on the book. I want to thank him for that question. It's good. I would like Hugh to address it because he'll even talk about in a rural area of Russia, there's a very similar thing. Like in 34 days, 45 alien beings were seen over a course of 34 days by a number of mass people. And he's got some observation then on that, and that comes from his section. I really want to reserve it for him. I can't really go into what he will say. I have my own suspicions, but I really want him to be able to present that, if that's okay.
Anyone here in the live audience, if you have a question, just come back over here to the microphone, and I'll let you go at it.
Okay, thank you very much for this information. And the question that just occurred to me, though, is like if the idea that these are angelic or fallen angels, what kind of evidence would you need in order to make that, to verify that claim?
That's a very good one. So we do make some connections in the book. We will, and I'll let their chapter speak for themselves, but there's several. If you look at the if you look at the abductee and the contactee groups of people and their experiences, they have heavy influence with the occult. Heavily influenced by the occult. And two, they have long-term psychological and spiritual harm done to them. So that's the real extreme. So we're talking, you know, a range from people who have slightly open doors to the occult, like maybe participating in a Ouija board when they're a kid or playing in a game. I had a friend at church I did a talk on, and she'd actually participated in levitation with her friends as a kid. And when I told her about this, she went and they did everything necessary to repent and turn those lives over to Christ. So there's everything from very minor open door to the occult to very heavy. Now, what's fascinating is it's said today that a study and survey after survey shows that as more and more millennials are getting their daily information from horoscopes than they are from their Bible, which only portends of even increase in this phenomena. And we've seen the numbers of reports keeps going up over time, and we're likely to see more effects of it. I would say that in the field in which I work in, the military pilots, the most important thing we could do, but it's probably never going to happen from our perspective, is, and I check with a former student who was a pilot, check with others. There are personal reliability programs, PRPs, that are in place for people who are officers who work with nuclear weapons. And that can include, and I know with intelligence agencies, they can have psychological inventories, and they can take them again and again to make sure they remain reliable and remain faithful. But most of our pilots are not subjected to a psychological exam, despite the highly classified nature of our weapons platforms. I would think that one of the ways that we could prove definitively our claim is not just by, you know, and then Hugh's got some other points that he'll make, some more circumstantial but important ones. I think in my field, if we could do a psychological inventory and ask those questions, did you ever play with Ouija boards, did you ever play with tarot cards, that would be a way for us to get a verifiable proof of it. But I think it would be illegal in the U.S. because of religious liberties. So it might be illegal to ask anything about your religious practices, whether they trend in the occult or not. So I would say in my case, this is how you could get definitive proof. Thank you.
Tom Longo asks, Dr. Clark, have you personally ever witnessed such phenomenon?
Good question. I have witnessed very interesting phenomena, very interesting, and I don't believe any were you at, but let me give you two or three examples. One example, November of 2016, my wife and I with her brother were driving down towards Laguna Beach to see her cousin for Thanksgiving, and it was just at dusk, and we saw this really interesting sky light that looked like a helicopter flashlight, but it was very circumscribed and very particular, and it was in this weird angle, and I thought, that's bizarre. You know people are going to get calls or UFO reporting, and they did. Then that blue light that was very definitive and can't function like a normal light dissipates eventually, but doesn't terminate that expressly. And then all of a sudden it blossomed into a blue ball of light. And I thought, well, you know it's not from Vandenberg, because Vandenberg's north. We all see the Starlink satellites, we see the missile launches. This wasn't that. So I said, it's got to be a military exercise of some kind. And they were all, you know, listen, we turned on the radio, we listened to all the UFO chatter that was going on. Sure enough, the next day, the Navy had announced it had done a submarine launch ballistic missile test from off the coast, the west coast, down towards Kwajalein Test Range in South Pacific. The second one, I've seen more, but I'll give you one more that's pretty fascinating. I go hunting with a group of friends up in Kelso Valley, which is kind of near Lake Isabella, but off the high deserts, near Edwards Air Base, Skunk Works. And then China Lake is out there, and then further up north is Area 51. And we witnessed, and because you know I had written the book, and some of my younger friends were like, Mark, come out and look at this. And we saw circling around us in a traveling at night, pattern, huge pattern, probably 40, 50 mile loop of this plane with escorts. And you couldn't see the plane because it's dark, but you could see all the lights on it. And this thing was huge. It was the size of like a four-story building looking like an escalator in the front end or an elevator open glass. It was huge. And then it separated into three distinct things and then merged back together. And that was, but it was surrounded by fighter jets, so which probably the size of F-16s. That had to be a new research development program. Not Ben Rich, there's another fellow, and I can't remember his name offhand, T.J. Barnes. He worked out at Area 51 for years, and he used to say, we get all kinds of reports all the time, usually around Southern California and around Washington, because both Lockheed Martin and Boeing do a lot of their development stuff before they bring it out to Area 51, and when they do their development stuff, people report higher incidences of UFO calls occur all the time. So I have personally, and I've seen others, but those are the two that I think that are most standout-ish.
Val Durham, last week you spoke of AARO and its modern efforts to gather and analyze UAP info. Mm-hmm. What types of data have they gathered since 2022?
Their last report was 2024, and it was, again, it's going to be an annual report, so I'm waiting for it this year. I haven't seen this year's. Last report, they have over 1,400 cases total they're looking at, and it includes eyewitness testimony, sensor data, radar, video telemetry, and they haven't deployed. Remember I mentioned, for you who asked the question, they have yet to deploy the Gremlin, which is that new sensor suite designed to detect and be a mobile sensor suite that can adapt, because the NASA had suggested we need to have multi and hyperspectral sensors that can actually get better discrimination of what UAP phenomenon is. And they haven't done that yet, or at least they haven't reported that that's been done as of this point.
I'll ask a question myself. Last week you said something that really stuck with me, and I thought it was very important, and I'm wondering if you could expand on it, because it answered some questions for me. What you said was, if several or many people see the same UAP phenomenon, it doesn't mean that they're all involved in the occult. It could just be one person that is bringing it on, and several people in the local area can observe it. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. Let me take you to the Bible. Let's go to Daniel. I think it's Daniel chapter 10. He has a vision. He's trying to understand this vision, and he prays and fasts for 3 weeks, and the man dressed in linen comes to him. That's the description of it. It's a stock description of a celestial being in the Old Testament. And this, the man in linen, dressed in linen, is an interesting character, because what happens is Daniel faints away. His friends faint and then run away when they wake up. Daniel has to be revived 2 or 3 times, both because of the visage of this angelic being and because of the apocalypse or the revelation he was getting and trying to understand it. It was overwhelming. There are other incidences. You can look back into other parts of the Bible. When angelic beings are in the presence, they can mask their appearance, but when they come in their full glory, they overwhelm human beings. So my point was that his two friends that fainted and fled away were not righteous enough like Daniel was, and yet they were affected by this phenomenon. Why would it not be the case that there could be people who are in the occult, and they witness it, it's coming to present to them, and other people are affected by that, if that makes sense.
I think that's good. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I get to ask a lot of questions myself. Here's one. Could you comment about the movement towards or acceptance of Christian nationalism in the United States?
I'm a bit ambiguous what they mean by that. So it's a politically charged term today, right? Christian nationalism. And I guess the question is, in what sense and in what way do you mean Christian nationalist? Does it mean being a patriotic American and a Christ follower? I think the two can be compatible, so long as you don't put your country over God, right? It's God, country, core, in my case, the Marine Corps. So I think it depends on what you would mean by Christian nationalist. I know I've seen some interesting writing on it, but it tends to be, they're sloppy in their definitions. Just as I went through and gave you the legal definitions of cover-up and conspiracy, I think it's crucial to have a very clear definition of what Christian nationalism before I could answer that. Because again, I think it's very possible. I became a Christian in the Marine Corps. And it was a very challenging environment for me at the time. It was not very widely supported by other people. But I saw no contradiction between following God and following country until country tells me to do something anti-God. So I guess it depends on what the person means by Christian nationalist. And I'm not trying to fudge it, but it's an ambiguous term it's a pejorative term by some people too today.
Hi. I think you may have already answered this, but I've been running around quite a bit this morning. I had a question here. I had a friend that says that the government's been in contact with these aliens, like ancient civilizations with time travel, reptilians. You mentioned reptilians, greys. I heard you say something about that earlier. I know about those a little bit, but it sounds like there's this big conspiracy that we have been in contact with these people for many, many years, communicating with them and hiding it from the public. I'm sure that's what probably all this has to do with, but did you talk about that or would you?
I didn't talk about that one because that's much broader than even the one that I'm dealing with. I'm dealing here specifically with a very concrete claim the government's hiding a crash retrieval program, not because that is a separate, that's why I said there's probably 2,000 or 3,000 different kinds of conspiracy theories about UFOs. And that's one of the rarest, but it's not on, people do believe in that. I didn't address that in the book, and I didn't address it in this topic. I haven't addressed it. I find this closer to concrete, meaning we could actually, if this is true, if what they claim, if these conspiracists claim, if they can prove it, then I will change my view on things. But I haven't seen proof yet. Whereas in contact with alien civilizations, stuff like that, that's just, I don't know how you would prove it or what that would mean if you could. So I would leave it at that, Jamie. Thank you. Yeah.
Okay, what was the name of the gentleman that you said, that you mentioned, who said that there are dead aliens and technology that we've been studying?
He's listed on that Variety. Let me see if I can find it here for
that's,
you.
That's okay. My question has to do...
It's Jay Stratic or Stratic, I think. I can't remember which.
Here's how I see that, and tell me if you think I'm right or wrong. If he really works for the government, he necessarily has signed a, what do you call it?
Non-disclosure agreement.
NDA. Disclosure agreement. The fact that he's not in prison or fined or censored, doesn't that mean that he's automatically mean that what he said is false?
You know, I think that's a good question. I don't want to get into motives because, we could make claims like, well, they're in it for money or they're in it for fame or they're in it for whatever. I think some of these folks are sincere. I think Lou Elizondo is sincere. I think David Grush, when you read his stuff, is very sincere. But I think you can be deceived and be sincere. So I don't know what to make of that. I'm very cautious, but it is interesting to me that all these, and I'll be fascinated to watch the show to see, do they put their names and titles and where they came from, and why they can make a claim about revealing a super secret program without violating their oath. That to me is the biggest contradiction I've seen.
I want to just, as a aside here, two things. I want to remind people to take flyers for the Skeptics Forum, and also if you sat down and you thought you saw everything that was at the food table, you're wrong. People have been bringing all kinds of other goodies, so go back and add some calories to your lunch. All right, Jamie's got another one.
That last question was actually for somebody else, so who had reached out to me, but I think everybody here would probably agree, I think, that even if aliens existed or whatever, it doesn't really impact the gospel or doesn't impact the Bible. I don't see how it would, but there's a mindset that either aliens exist or the Bible is true. And if, you know, people tell me, oh, I've seen a UFO, so the Bible can't be true. They insinuate that at least, so... What are your thoughts on that? How would you explain that one?
That's a great one. In fact, Jeff Zwirnick, scientist at Reasons to Believe, has pointed out that it doesn't affect our core beliefs at all if we find out that there are actually planets out there in the universe. That doesn't affect anything. This is still the only planet that we're aware of that needed redemption, the only planet that has human life. What Hugh's task is, and what I think the Reasons to Believe task is, to show how... at least as presented by most people, the ETH, the extraterrestrial hypothesis, that we're being visited repeatedly by aliens through traditional propulsion means, there's something wrong with that view. The physics of the universe don't allow for it. So that's where we came up, well, it wasn't us who came up with it. It's actually Jacques Vallée and a bunch of others who believe in what they call the interdimensional hypothesis. And that's the idea that they transit these beings, and I would agree, spirit beings, celestial beings, fallen beings, transverse interdimensional space. And that's why they can appear and disappear, where Jesus could appear and disappear to his own disciples. And angelic beings can do the same thing. They can mask themselves as humans and then appear in their glory. So yes, we do think there are interdimensional beings, but what Elizondo and Grush posit is that these are the aliens' mode of transport. But they don't get very specific about that. It's only a theory. They say it's a theory that we have because they're confronted with the hard reality of physics that limit the amount of travel that you could make interstellar distances. So I'll leave it at that, Jamie, but that's a good question. Yes, sir.
Joe Gadzia again. He says, what are your thoughts on Bob Lazar?
I haven't looked into him for a long time.
Can you tell us who he is?
He had written quite a bit back in the day. He was very big. I think the Skinwalker Ranch, that was a big episode. That's part of this whole conspiracy stuff. It's been a long time since I've looked at him. I couldn't. Bob Bigelow, I could. Bob Bigelow, I think I mentioned last week. Bob Bigelow, and this is why I'm segueing a little bit, is the one that encouraged Senator Harry Reid to form the ATIP program, that earmark, or pork that we call it, pork politics, of $22 million through the DIA back to Bob Bigelow's program for aerospace research into alien life. Lazar hasn't been on many people's radar screen for some time, so I'm not sure he's the player. I think the video that I just shared with, the trailer that I just shared with, is going to be the talking points for the next probably 2 years in our cultural moment. Maybe only a year, but we'll see. But I think that's going to be bigger ones.
I have another question. If anyone in this room, if we're driving along and somehow we have an experience of something that we suspect or are pretty certain is a UAP in the sense that you're talking about it, what should our reaction be?
I would pray immediately, first thing. And if I'm with someone, talk to them. And then if you're still in doubt and you feel affected by it, definitely talk to someone you trust, and you know, a spiritual mentor or friend that you would trust, and share with them how it affected you, what it meant to you, and then talk to God about, did I expose myself to the occult at some point inadvertently? I think it's very simple. I mean, it's not that complicated. You know, a lot of times it's simply being open to God and His Spirit, being influenced by that. But it's more likely that you will know someone that has a friend that's seen UFOs. That seems to be more likely. 50% of Americans either know someone or claim they've seen or believe in UFOs. Not have seen, but they know someone who has, or they believe in UFO phenomena, extraterrestrial life. That's also an open door to the occult. I think we asked the question last week, what is the strategy? Why is the demonic realm doing this? I mean, this is, to me, a good military question. Why is this going on? If it's spiritual, like we think it is, and it's not benign spiritual, why are they engaging this behavior? And it's to distract us from the gospel. It's always interesting. It keeps you off focus, off center from God. If it diminishes any way the universal God of the universe, then it will diminish your faith and diminishes your connection with other people. And I think that's what they're trying to do. I do know a person, and this happened to me a month ago, or it was 2 months ago now, in Durango, who told me, I didn't know this because I play pickleball and saw her, she does yoga for people. I saw her at the gym, and she was telling me about this friend of hers, a psychic, says, oh yeah, they're going to reveal themselves next October in Del Norte, Colorado. There's a ship hovering over there right now. So we'll find out next year. But anyway, and my wife goes, what did you say to her? I said, well, I was not in a good place to say anything at that time, but that's a conversation with her I'm going to have next year when it doesn't happen. So, or if I see her before then, because she's in Colorado, I will have a chat with her about that. Yes, sir.
Yeah, just wondering, have there been others who have asserted the idea that these are spiritual manifestations, including the Catholic Church or other individuals?
That's interesting. I've not heard the Catholic Church make a statement on it. It doesn't mean they haven't. I just haven't heard of it, or the Orthodox. I'm not sure about Islam. I'm not sure about Mormons, because I think they believe in alien life, and they believe in life being populated out there by us. Don't know about others. But I do know that it's more common in the evangelical Protestant community, I would say, to be aware of it, that it's a spiritual dimension. Some take it way too far. That, you know, to me, it's, you know, this is all not real. This is not, can't happen. No, things are happening, and they are. I think it's interesting. The Comita report said they have no evidence that these UAP are hostile, which I found fascinating, because that's the way they're being portrayed by others. But they are under intelligent control. And what do I mean by that? Well, for example, of Jafari, they could electronically shut their aircraft down until they left. If it was hostile in the sense of immediate and tactical, they could have destroyed the aircraft, but they couldn't. And then in the case of Huertas in Peru, they fled. That intelligent aircraft fled. So they're not hostile in the sense of hostile aliens, but they are doing spiritual harm. So if that makes sense. Okay, thank you.
Tinny W. says, what are your thoughts on biological aliens within our universe that use unknown technology or unknown laws of physics for traversal?
So Hugh would say, and I'll have to defer to Hugh on this, he's the physicist astronomer, that there's great scientific proof that the laws of physics are uniform throughout the physical universe. And that pretty much rules out this idea that there's can be unknown laws. Now, what happens in extra dimensions, we have some ideas, but we can't operate there. I know that Hugh said that in mathematics, you can work out proofs out to 9th, 8th, 9th, and 10th dimension, physical dimension. But they don't apply to us in the same way that we're talking about here.
Jared Neal has a really good question that sort of dovetails what I was asking. He says, do NDAs include restrictions on false statements regarding secret programs?
That I don't know. That's an interesting. I think the way it would work, an NDA typically, and it's not, it's, that's the way John Alexander mentioned it, called it an NDA. The way classification works is you sign on the dotted line. It is illegal to reveal this, to do this, to talk about that, and you're, you know, you're not cleared for X number of years after you're out of it, so you're legally culpable for it. I don't know that they would be, that would include disinformation about what the Pentagon's doing. I don't know that. That's a good question. I have no idea. Yeah.
Mark, tell us, this is another question for me. I'm curious, I'd love to know, maybe I think the class would too, what got you interested in this?
That's a good question. I'm not really interested in it. I feel reluctantly drawn in. And this is my joke with Reasons to Believe. I'm kind of tangential to what Reasons does, right? There's scientists looking for proof and all that. I'm a political scientist, which by definition is neither political. Well, it's all political, but no science. I got dragged in because they needed someone that could look at the government component to it, the history of the actual government's working. And so I understand the government. I've worked, I was in the Marine Corps for a while. I did some classified and unclassified work for a lot of agencies. And then I received a number of grants from intelligence agencies to train students, prepare them for careers in intelligence. I worked on how can we improve, all at the unclassified level, by the way, how can we improve intelligence analysis with the techniques that we have, how to develop cybersecurity and intelligence programs. I've done all that. I've worked a lot with government, so it's because of that that I was more reluctantly pulled in. But actually, Daniel's my favorite subject. Daniel, because of the politics that he was engaged in and because of his righteous living. To me, that's far more interesting than UAP, UFOs. But I've been asked to do it, so I'm a former Marine. So you salute and say, yes, sir.
Okay. Kit West asks, probably our last question. I should invite my skeptic friend to this YouTube channel next Sunday at what time? It's going to be at 12:15, the same time as Paradox. I'll find a link in the permanent comments. Yes, so that's not really a question for you, but do you have anything you want to finish us with, and then you can close us in prayer?
Sure. I would say, keep in mind, any kind of, life-consuming passion outside of Christ is not worthy. It's not worthwhile for our souls. Our passion is to follow Jesus Christ, is to look at the world through the prism of His Word and His ways. Truth, it permeates reality, right? It's all over. God is a God of truth. James talks about it as the Father of lights. All good, noble things come from Him. Keep your mind fixed on Christ. He's the center. It's not the world we live in. It's not all the latest fads, the latest cultural trends. The UFO phenomena is an up and down trend that gets people hooked. It also, I know that it traps people. I know people closely who are trapped into the belief that we're being visited, that I don't know what I'm talking about. but their life is spiritually defunct because of that, or actually corrupted because of that. And I would say, you know, following Christ is the only way, and we need to be prepared to help people who might be open to that truth, to the ability to hear of that truth, especially if they get harmed by their experiences with or belief in UAP and UFO phenomena. So be prepared. I mean, that's, you know, 1 Timothy, always be prepared to give a defense for the hopes in you, but be more prepared with knowledge when it comes to people who believe this. And that doesn't mean you can out-argue them. If they're committed to their belief, there's little you can do. You can pray for them, but there's little you can do other than being a loving friend. And I think it's crucial, it's coming on us Christians, as to have that light, have that ability to share our faith with those who are trapped by this, because it is harmful. In the long run, it is very harmful, spiritually, psychologically, and at times physically. So with that, I'll close in prayer. Thank you, guys. Father in heaven, we come before you knowing that you are the Father of all, and that there are other beings throughout the universe. You created all levels of celestial beings, and there's a half or more or some section of that have rebelled against you, and they're making mischief on the earth. Lord, let us always keep our eyes focused on your Son, Jesus Christ, the author and finisher of our faith. Lord, we thank you for this time to talk about this tough subject. I pray that we go away wiser, with better information, more skill, and a desire to learn more, if only to know how to defend the truth, to always be prepared to give a defense for the hope that's in us, yet with gentleness, respect, and a clean conscience. Lord, we thank you for this great day, this time together. I pray that this class continue to uncover new truths about you and your Son and the work you do throughout creation. In Jesus' name, amen. Thank you.